gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. Free speech goes indoors today, so I won't be walking my dogs during the show, which sometimes is causes unpredictable things. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664, phone it in to 1-800-724-2719. The operator is standing by. We've got, I'm going back to the well with you, Paul. We got Paul Stevenson today. Thank you very much for joining me.
It's a pleasure, Patrick. It's a deep well, so there's plenty to draw upon.
There is, and
not me specifically. I just mean everything that's going on.
Well, one thing is, you're from Britain, and I know Alexander Maturis. He's always choosing his words very carefully, which can be annoying. But he does have a good reason for doing so, because you know we've got freedom of speech crises all around the world. But it's pretty clear in Britain that you don't have freedom of speech and the truth is no defense. Is that the correct summation?
Yeah, I mean, I know we joke about Mercurius and maybe, you know, we're a little bit contemptuous of when he says things like that, but like I said to you a minute ago, I'm not without sympathy for him, because it's very claustrophobic here. You can get in trouble very easily here. One of the things they can do to you, for example, is they can just drag you through the courts. And then you end up with typically some upper middle class woman, maybe Jewish, maybe not, wagging her finger at you for something you said. I talk from experience, from something I said to someone in 2017. It was nothing. It was absolutely nothing. And I still got dragged through the courts, and they call it, you've got a case to answer to. Now, nothing happened. But they dragged me through the courts and they gave me a little caution. And I had some upper middle class white woman judge wagging her finger at me like I'm a little child and she's the headmaster and telling me to go away and mend my ways and watch what I say. And that was pretty innocuous. God only knows what could happen to you. It'd be a lot more severe, I fear, for some of the stuff we talk about. So, yeah, it's annoying and frustrating, because it's always kind of lurking at the back of your mind. Oh my God, am I going to get, you know, because it's just, they just turn up and they say, oh, you've got to turn yourself into the police station and answer some questions. That's how they did it with me. 6 months later, 6 months after I had said this thing to this individual, you know, so that's his country.
Yeah.
We're not arresting you. But you've got a case to answer for. The CPS have deemed that you've got a case to answer for. You're not a Muslim, you know, Pakistani rapist or a pedophile. But you've got a case to answer for, because you said something outside of the acceptable matrix of that we have created for you to live in.
So yeah, we've got here the tip of the spear of the free speech right now is actually these typically leftist, often foreigner, often Jewish,
college students,
and Columbia University. We've got some names. The first who's undergoing deportation proceedings is this Mahmoud Khalid, who is a Palestinian who grew up in Syria. He's married to an American citizen. I assume she's probably you can hear her speak on the video that she took of her husband being arrested. She's 8 months pregnant. And her accent is completely native, but I have the feeling she may well be, you know, of Arab extract. And while she was speaking on the, during the video, she said, made some reference to phoning Noor. Well, Noor is a kind of a typical Arab woman's name. So I don't know if she's if she's
Lebanese,
of maybe or not, but she's an American citizen and obviously was either born here or has been here since childhood from the accent. And you know, that was the first salvo. Then you have some kidney doctor from Brown University. I guess he's a professor of kidney medicine. I don't want to mispronounce it. And then more and more and more. And now I think you're in dozens and dozens of people. So the Justice Department under Pam Bondi, who is a blonde-haired beach bimbo. It would have been a lot better if it was Matt Gaetz, but maybe Matt Gaetz would have done the same old stuff. But she was the Attorney General of Florida, and she's super, super pro-Jush. And she's cracking down.
By the way,
what you just
said there, blonde bimbo, is not a million miles away from what I said to a girl back in 2017 who got me in trouble. I just followed it up by telling her to F off afterwards, you silly bimbo, or something like that. Anyway, continue. But that's how sensitive it is.
Well, I mean, I'm saying she's a bimbo, and she's acting like a bimbo. I mean, frankly, she's acting like a whore, because what do whores do? Whores tell
whore
people.
Themselves.
Yeah, they hire themselves out. They hire themselves out. And this is what she's done for her political career. Florida is a place where the donor class is largely Jewish. The donor class, well, actually, the donor class is just a euphemism used, I guess, more by Napolitano than by Mercurius. He's probably more likely to talk about neocons, but Napolitano talks about the donor class. But yeah, the Jews are they're extremely powerful in Florida, right? New York, California, Florida. I mean, Florida, you think a lot of older Jews.
Particularly Zionist Jews or just Jews generally?
Probably. Well, I mean, Jews with a strong Jewish identity. Is it particularly Zionist? Well, it's Zionist enough that sitting governor Ron Santos, one of the first things he did when he became governor was he flew his entire cabinet out to Israel to sign a law, an anti-Semitism law.
Yeah, so, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, they not only did they pass this anti-Semitism law, but they flew to Israel to sign it. Mm-hmm. And of course it outlawed it. It, among other things, would deprive state funding of universities that don't crack down on criminalized protests against Israel.
Yeah, so
universities. And Pam Bondi, yeah, presumably, would have been one of the ones who went out there. I'm not sure when she became Attorney General of Florida, but she would have been Attorney General of Florida in the Ron DeSantis administration, I believe. So
yeah, well, when these kind of actual restrictions on free speech emerged, you know, which is against literally, you know, any criticism of the state of Israel. Yeah, so I remember when this emerged, this actual, you know, restriction on free speech for anyone criticizing Israel, essentially. All the free speech media over here who like to mock the social justice warriors and the far left for their intolerance of speech and censorship, etc., including Douglas Murray, who's a director of the Free Speech Union and a staunch Zionist, staunch Israel supporter. It was deafening silence. I mean, the complete hypocrisy of them all. Not a word about it, you know, because that censorship, that's those far left. In fact, they would accuse, you know, the sort of people who have been victims of, you know, this clampdown on free speech in America of the type of people who hate free speech. So they didn't get involved with it or try to defend it. There was just deafening silence. You would have thought for these people who've made a career out of promoting free speech and criticizing the lack of free speech, all the while, by the way, never actually say anything that's that important anyway, you would have thought that they would have been all over that. But alas, deafening silence from those people. In fact, Glenn Greenwald seemed to be quite irritated by it. He did a lot of coverage on that at the time. So anyway, yeah, the whole free speech thing, it's almost just a given now that, you know, we don't have that in this country. I mean, J.D. Vance brought it up when Starmer was over there, and Starmer talked about, oh, we're very proud of our history of free speech. Yeah, yeah, our history of free speech. What about the present, you little weasel, you know?
Yeah, I just checked Pam Bondi. She had been Attorney General for Florida for the 8 years for Ron DeSantis' predecessor. So she wouldn't have been one of the people who had gone over to Israel. And I bet she wishes she had been. But she has pledged to deport the students who are not U.S. citizens if they're protesting Israel. And she has said that she's going to send the FBI to question the American citizens who protest Israel. And, you know, what happens when the FBI comes by your house? Well, they may shoot your dogs. That's something that has been epidemic in the past. And the other thing is they are allowed to lie to you. The FBI can lie to you. If you don't intentionally lie, but simply incorrectly answer questions, then that's if there was no intent to deceive or lie, but you just get a detail wrong, then that's lying to the FBI, and then that's a crime. So you're putting anybody who gets questioned by the FBI is in extreme peril. You really shouldn't answer anything. You shouldn't let them in unless they have a warrant, and you shouldn't answer anything without a lawyer. But most people are just going to go ahead and answer, and it's at their extreme peril.
Yeah. Well, to my mind, this whole Israel thing has gone into a gear which is just beyond absurd now and ought to be unacceptable. But alas, Trump seems to be going along with it. You know, you've got, you know, he talks about all his compassion. And he, you know, for ending this war and ending the killing, and well, they're not Americans, but they're Russians and Ukrainians, and they're beautiful, beautiful young men. If you know, someone's brother, someone's uncle, someone's father, someone's son. But he seems to, his compassion for the Palestinians and those in the West Bank and in Lebanon and Yemen seems to have abandoned and deserted him. So, you know, and then you've got this dictator Netanyahu, you know, apart from the extremists that we spoke about yesterday with their eschatological insanity and, you know, the general zealots for the greater Israel plan, you know, you've got this dictator Netanyahu who, like Zelensky, needs to keep wars going all the time so he can stay in power. I mean, like I said, this is a state that apparently was created to provide safety and security for the long-suffering persecuted Jews. And all they do is there anybody in the Middle East that they're not at war with? And one thing that's not, and it's not even at war, most of the time is just, you know, 95% one way, dropping these massive ordinances on civilians most of the time. And occasionally they get a few rockets from Hamas, or the Houthis are obviously causing some problems in the Red Sea. But, you know, these people just can't get on with anybody. I mean, is there anybody they're not at war with, or they're not bombing? And the other thing that people don't talk about that much is the amount of territory that they have taken in Syria, you know, including telling the new regime in Syria, you know, limits as to where they can go, you know, south of Damascus, and they've taken the whole Mount Hermon, which is very strategic in terms of its position militarily. So I mean, and they just bomb children, women. Well, you know, because they're terrorists. Oh well, you know, well, are the children terrorists? No, but their parents are terrorists. Are the women terrorists? No, but they are shielding terrorists. Is the hospital a terrorist center? Well, they keep terrorist weapons in there. I mean, the amount of leverage these people get from that one word is just everyone, okay, well, kill away then. You know, you managed to kill one terrorist, apparently. I know you killed another 300 people as well at the same time, but you got some terrorist, and he was a significant terrorist. I mean, I just don't understand how these guys with a straight face can continue this support of Israel, this blind support of Israel, and allow themselves to be so manipulated by terrorism, you know, and Israel defending itself. Meanwhile, Patrick, just to finish my rant, on a more wider geopolitical issues, you know, we spoke yesterday about, you know, Steve Witkoff essentially, you know, blowing this whole narrative about Russia out of the water, that this menticidal narrative, you know, that we've all had to suffer for and tolerate and endure for the last 3.5 years. He's blown that out of the water, but I did question what his motivation is. And, you know, the war drums seem to be beating for Iran. And I'm wondering if the Americans are thinking that if they, you know, if they make it in stone that Ukraine won't join NATO, they've got the 5 regions, we'll stop supplying the weapons and the money, but we're going to be attacking Iran and you stay out of it. I wonder, is some of that going on, including China? So there seems to be a big charm offensive going on to the Russians, which I don't think necessarily is entirely genuine, probably, you know?
I mean, I've said it before. I think, you know, Trump is, like, maybe all of politics is kind of a Faustian deal. And the deal that he's arranging is saying, please, Jews, let me avert a potentially civilization-ending World War III with Russia. Let me slow down the ethnic replacement of Americans with random people. And in exchange, we'll give the Israeli government free rein and support for their genocide. And we will criminalize anybody who notices and complains about Jewish power. And that seems to be the deal, because he's a deal maker.
Probably is. Because, like I said, it just I don't necessarily trust this, you know, this charm offensive and sudden recognition of the sort of, you know, Russia's position that we've been talking about and for the last 3.5 years. The problem for them is I don't think it, I think it puts Putin in a difficult situation, but I don't think he's going to buy it. I don't think Putin's going to stand back and allow Iran to be attacked, you know. I don't think he's going to necessarily get, you know, directly involved, but I think he's going to be semi-directly involved in proceedings, because I don't think he's going to want Iran, you know, to fall, basically. But it does seem that they're gearing up for some sort of attack in Iran, and if not entirely, that's certainly part of it. With, you know, because every time you hear these guys, I was listening to what's his name, Waltz, earlier, you know, it's the Iranian-backed Houthis. And, you know, I think Trump, some of his rhetoric recently is like saying, you know, it's early.
You've got the magic touch. Ooh. It makes me glow so much. Ooh. It casts a spell. It rings a bell. The magic touch. Oh, when I feel your charm. Ooh. It's like a four-alarm. You make me thrill so much. You've got the magic touch. Here I go. Oh,
Get More Tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get More Tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get More Tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A five-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less valuable its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar has tanked. It's worth nothing. And yet gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis. Historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers. And Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
Lover, your wonderful charm. Lips that once were mine. Tender. Baby, and I'll see you in my dreams, and I'll see you in my dreams.
You know, it's the Iranian-backed Houthis, and, you know, I think Trump, some of his rhetoric recently is like saying, you know, it's urgent because, you know, we haven't got much time if Iran gets a nuclear weapon. Despite the fact I'm pretty sure that part of the deal that Putin has with Iran is that they don't acquire a nuclear weapon, but they will give them the most sophisticated high-tech air defense systems they have available to them, which are the best in the world, probably. But we'll see. I mean, they seem to be hell-bent on attacking Iran, you know?
Well, this has been the Israeli...
Or do you agree with that? Do you think that will be averted?
I think in the long run, it'll be averted because of the super friends. The super friends are Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping. They're the super friends. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's too far. But, you know, a lot depends on timing. So what's going to be the timing of the end of the war in Ukraine? If, because once the war in Ukraine is, once that settles down, then you've got Russia's going to be relatively, have their, they'll be relatively free to assert themselves elsewhere in the globe. And so what would that look like? Yeah, it depends. It depends on the timing. Iran.
And it also depends.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's entirely in the control of even Russia and America to bring that war to an end. It's not going to be that simple because, you know, these Ukrainian nationalist guys, Banderites or whatever they see themselves as, I think the relationship with them and Zelensky is quite complex and toxic. And I think they're going to want to keep it going. If it fails at this point, probably, you know, Zelensky might even lose his life. And they are troublesome. I guess the Americans can go a long way by, you know, stopping the oxygen to that fire by stopping the weapons going in there. But, you know, these guys have a lot of drones. They can make their own drones. And I think I don't really know how that situation in Kiev is going to be sorted out, because it really is the Wild West there. You know, so the Russians and the Americans can make deals, but as long as that cancer is still in there, I think it's going to be a problem. They're probably going to find some way of having these random drone attacks in Russian territory and probably still in the Donbass region. And it might be a case that, I mean, I think a full-on mobilization might be a bit extreme, and it might not even be that effective. It might be messy to go into to Kiev or wherever these guys, you know, are and root them out. Maybe it'll be the type of thing that where Russian sort of, you know, special forces, you know, smaller groups of elite forces groups go in and they have to deal with these guys and actually literally take these guys out. I don't know, but it's, you know, that's a complex situation in Kiev. And I, as much as Zelensky, I think, is a little crook, I sometimes think that he fears for his life all the time. Maybe that's why he's developed a cocaine habit. I don't know if he had a cocaine habit before all this, but, you know, I think that situation with these people, these Ukrainian nationalists, is quite complex, you know?
Well, you know, you can say, well, the various forces in Ukraine, and particularly the government there, dependent on foreign aid, they're dependent on aid from Europe and especially from America, and everything can get cut off. But even if you cut off the spigot, it doesn't run dry immediately. And
no, exactly.
Even if there's a level of dependency, there's also a certain level of autonomy, a certain level of independence. The these like neo-Nazi right sector.
And the Azov Battalion. Yeah, and the Azov Battalion.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Adrift in a world of my own, I play the game, but to my real shame,
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full one-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button, like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You're my dream come true, my one and only you. Only you can make all this change in me.
These, like, neo-Nazi right sector.
And the Azov Battalion. Yeah, and the Azov Battalion.
Yeah. They're going to operate.
They're strange. They're a bit of a strange bunch, you know, these guys, because. Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
No, go right ahead.
No, because I was listening to one of them yesterday, and it's like, they're a little bit of a tragic sort of bunch of people, really. You know, I'm not really. I think they've got an identity crisis, and it's almost a bit childish in a way. I don't mean to be patronizing to them, but there are aspects to them which are a little bit crazy. Just like grow up. Don't know what you expect to achieve. You know, you know, because it's this idea for having, and I have sympathy for it. They, you know, they want to have this separate Ukrainian identity. But when you really dig down into it, what is it? I mean, these people are in Western Ukraine. They're a mixture of Poles, Bulgarians, Hungarians, some Russian. You know, it's like they need to move on and realize that people don't want to be in constant war and find some settlement and forget about World War II. You know, it's they too seem to be stuck in 1938. Everybody's stuck in 1938, Patrick. I was listening to an English guy yesterday, one of the few members of the House of Lords, and he was like, well, a big part of this narrative is, you know, with the British, it's, you know, the British appeased Adolf Hitler. And the Germans could never move on because they produced Adolf Hitler. And, you know, so everybody, I think, needs to just move on from this, you know, World War II situation, you know. I suppose it's easy for me to say I'm Irish. Maybe these guys are, you know, but from what I know of them, they're a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? And I don't want to be, you know, patronizing to them, but it's almost like it's like an unrealistic sort of view they have, where they're going to have this purity of a Ukraine, right? You know, Ukraine ethnic group, but you know, at what cost? You know, it's like, you know.
Well, and part of it is, if you're going to talk about a Ukrainian nation or a Ukrainian ethnic group, what are the boundaries of it?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, if you go back and you well, there's a couple of things you can do. I mean, because Ukraine doesn't have a history as an independent state, or they have very little history. So they have the history since the dismantling of the Soviet Union. Within the Soviet Union, they had republic status within the Soviet Union, where they weren't genuinely sovereign, but they were nominally sovereign, and the borders changed. The Crimea wasn't part of it, then Crimea was part of it. The western boundary of it changed dramatically with territory that was acquired during World War II. There were two very brief periods where you had maybe a nominally independent Ukraine in the middle of World War I. I'm sorry, in the middle of World War II, under, you know, the German tutelage, and then very briefly in the wake of the Russian Revolution. These were very brief periods where you're not going to, where a nation's not going to coalesce. And if you go back before that, let's just say you superimpose the map of Ukraine from the year, you know, before 2000, or in the year 2000, whatever. You pick a year and you superimpose that map and you go back to 1850 or 1750 or 1650, and you would see that that territory was under the control of different – some.
Oh, you don't even have to go back that far.
Well, you can – no matter how far you go back, you're just going to see – you're going to see different boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Russian Empire controlled – big hunks of it, but the boundaries shifting. The Poles and the Lithuanians controlled big hunks of it. The Habsburgs, based in the Austro-Hungarian Empire or the Austrian Empire, controlled hunks of it. And the Turks probably did at some point, like Odessa. Turks, the Ottomans. So who's part of it and who's not? Kind of the crazy thing, the last thing I want to say, the crazy thing about what was going on between 2014 and 2022 with the shelling of the Donbass is, are the people of the Donbass, are they Ukrainian? Is if the territory is Ukrainian, are the people Ukrainian? And if the people are Ukrainian, then you have the Ukrainian government shelling and killing 14,000 of its own people. And if they're not their people, then what claim do they have to the land? So yeah, it gets very murky and complicated.
It does, and there are people in that region in the east who do identify as Ukrainian. But I, from the Ukrainians that I know as well, and this is not unique to Ukrainians, they don't seem to understand anything of their own history. You know, it seems to be quite common and ubiquitous generally. Well, it is in the West anyway. I remember even growing up in Northern Ireland where when we went down to the Republic of Ireland and played Gaelic sports, and some of the Irish guys would try and mock us and call us British. I mean, we were still there was still a war going on up there, but they were so detached from it by a couple of generations that they thought they were more Irish than the Irish in the north. I'm not saying it was, you know, that prevalent, but there was that type of thing when we were playing hurling and Gaelic football where they would call us Protestants and British and go back up to the north where you belong, that type of thing. And that level of ignorance. And this is why the war was still going on. Okay, it was a paramilitary situation up in the north. But I've known Ukrainians, and I've tried to, like, share what I know about their history. And it's like, what, if, especially if you're in the East, I mean, you speak Russian. Your father or your brothers are Russian. Your uncles are Russian. You're a member of the Orthodox Church. Why are you so zealous for this Ukraine thing? These are people in the East, not in the West. But these guys... These Azov battalion, I mean, first of all, it's completely unacceptable, whatever their ideology or whatever their desire, to my mind, is, which is to create almost a false Ukrainian identity, trying to force a square peg into a round hole and doing it with violence and doing it in the name of National Socialism. Here is, I'll quote you what one of these guys, I think, I'm not sure whether he's from the Azov battalion or whether he's from... the right sector or what, but this guy is apparently one of these characters. And he says here in the clip that I saw earlier, we were now been given so much weaponry, not because, as some say, the West is helping us, not because they want the best for us, but because we perform the tasks that they want, because we are the only ones who are ready to do them. Because we have fun. We have fun killing. And we have fun fighting. And they like, wow, let's see what's going to happen. And when he said they, this is Victoria Nuland and these types of people who've gotten involved with these people. Oh, they love killing. They enjoy killing. Anyway, he goes on. And that is the reason for the new alliance. Turkey, Poland, Britain, and Ukraine. Because they like fighting, and the West likes to supply them with weapons, and they've got so many weapons now. And he said, we are the flagman here because we have started a war that has not been seen for 60 years. And so imagine how many weapons we have, how many veterans we have. And now imagine Russia falls apart, turns into five different Russias or whatever. And then he goes on. We have the most javelins on the European continent. Maybe only the UK has more. This potential of these armed forces will immediately become a problem for all those... Sorry, it's a bit slow in reading. For all those who are now trying to give us problems. It is our joy and our sorrow. You need to understand why. Yes, it is hard. Not because... We are Ukrainians. Our ass has suffered for 300 years. Why finally everything good not just given to us, that we are such a good people? We want to join Europe. No, we are a huge, powerful state, and if we come to power, it will be both joy and problems for the whole world. Therefore, it is huge. It is a huge ambitious task. We live in a very cool time, and that is why there is an extremely ambitious, cool goal. Let's hear what the goal is. Not just become a part of the European family that has already collapsed. This is about new political alliances on the global level, new political challenges. I mean, this guy's deluded. I mean, he's dangerous. You know, he seems a bit—he seems largely unhinged to me. And I'm sorry I can't provide his name, but I can send you the content where I saw this on. And this guy is—I think he's one of these guys from the Right Sector or the Azov Battalion or something like that. And that too—I don't know. I don't. It's difficult to know what to make of that. He sounds unhinged.
Well, the Ukrainian state that emerged after the dismembering of the Soviet Union, it could have been a large, powerful state, you know, not a superpower, but in the context of Europe, it had, in terms of land mass, I'm pretty sure it was bigger than France. I mean, I'm pretty sure that besides the Russia itself, it would have been the largest European country by land mass. It once upon a time had a population, maybe back in the 80s, while it was still part of the Soviet Union, of right around 50 million, which would have at the time been about the same as Great Britain and West Germany, maybe a little less than West Germany, and about the same as France. Of course, its population started collapsing long before others did. So population wise, but still, it would have, you know, it could have been, you could have had 35, 40 million people. But that's contingent on the Russian speaking, Russian Orthodox church attending population buying into it. And of course, everything that's happened, especially since 2014, but to an extent even before, you know, that.
And by the way, that clip was from, I think, more around that time, 2014, 15 or something like that. So it hasn't aged well. We're talking about we've got more javelins and everything else, and now the country's wrecked by Russia.
Yeah. So they could have, had they been inclusive, maybe, you know, if had they tried to forge a more civic, less ethnic, like, I don't know. I mean, ethnically, how different are Ukrainians from Russians anyway? But they tried the person that you were quoting, his ilk wants a Ukrainian nationalism that is very much juxtaposed. It is very much set in contrast with Russia. It's a rejection.
Oh, yeah.
And okay, fine. But if you're going to do that, you should want a smaller state. You should not want to rule over 20 million Russian speaking, Russian Orthodox Church attending.
It's too complex. This is what I mean. They're trying to, you know, like you said, they could create a smaller state or something or annex. I don't know, but I mean, they just seem crazy, and it seems unrealistic in the context, and they're causing a lot of problems. And they're all going to get themselves wiped out by the Russians at some point. That's what's going to happen to them, because, you know, like you said, they can probably keep this going for a while. There's a lot of money pumped in there. I can be guaranteed some of these guys have been, you know, have been on the take and probably stashing some money away, stashing some weapons away that go in there so they can keep it going. And they can produce drones at relatively cheap prices. So who was it I was listening to earlier? Mercurius, actually, yesterday. He was saying, apparently, there is a growing frustration in Russia that the Putin's, you know, taking too long with this whole thing, and he's not going into Kiev and things like that and rooting this crowd out, and including Zelensky, you know. So, Douglas McGregor's been saying that right from the start as well. As long as this cancer remains intact, you know, this Kiev regime, as it's referred to, that there's not going to be any stability in that country, and they're still going to manage to pull off some of these, you know, essentially terrorist attacks, because
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
If you're an avid reader or lover of history or both, then I invite you to purchase Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy. The book delves into a controversial and often overlooked chapter of the American Civil War, specifically focusing on Union war crimes against Southern sympathizers and civilians in occupied Missouri. It centers on the massacre that took place on Christmas Day, 1863, in Ripley County, Missouri, where Union Major James Wilson's 3rd Missouri State Militia Cavalry attacked a gathering of Confederate supporters, including men, women, and children, and the elderly. Lacy aims to shed light on this event known as the Wilson Massacre by presenting a narrative that challenges the conventional historical accounts by providing evidence from local documents, eyewitnesses, newspaper articles, and military records. The book has been praised for its effort to bring forth a nuanced understanding of the brutality of the Civil War in Missouri, emphasizing the need to acknowledge all aspects of this tumultuous period. Lacy's work is commended for its thorough research and commitment to uncovering obscured truths in American history. And you can purchase it at foothillsmedia.net, foothillsmedia.net. To purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozark.
Each day I pray for evening just to be with you. Together at last at twilight time. Together at last at twilight time.
You know, this Kiev regime, as it's referred to, that there's not going to be any stability in that country, and they're still going to manage to pull off some of these, you know, essentially terrorist attacks, because they are paramilitary groups within the, this is the complexity of it. I was listening, I think it was Glenn Deason, he had a guy on who seems to know quite a lot about this stuff, because after we were speaking yesterday, I wanted to see what I could find out when we alluded to the complexities of the situation with Zelensky and these guys, and they sort of tend to operate as a paramilitary group within it's almost like it's like the Provisional IRA. We're sort of like, you know, operating within the Irish Army, but they're part of it, but they're not part of it. And it depends what decisions are made as to how much they're part of it. And I think Zelensky fears for his life with this crowd, you know. And you know, when I don't think Zelensky went into this situation thinking he was going to end up. I think he's got very wealthy, and I think he's a pretty unsavory character. But I think when he first went in there, he might have been more genuine, and then he realized what a hornet's nest he got himself involved in, and he was manipulated by the West. I don't know. Maybe that's too generous to Zelensky, you know. And you know, I'm no fan of Zelensky.
Could he have known what he was getting into? You know,
I'm not sure he did.
Who knows? Because he was an actor. He wasn't from the political world. And, regarding his drug use, who knows how much drugs he's been using? I mean, I don't know.
I think at the White House that Friday night when I looked at some footage of him, I think he was, you know, off his tits, as we say over here, because the way he was twitching, the way he was moving, and his mannerisms was consistent with someone. I don't know if you've ever seen many people who take cocaine, but his mannerisms were consistent with someone who's on cocaine. Fidgety, irritable, not fully in control. But that's just, you know, I've no proof of that, but I think he might have taken a couple of flat lines before he went in there.
Well, he may well have.
Okay, we're almost out of time, but do you have any thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, I think, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see how, because obviously they're in Riyadh again today with both the Ukrainians and the Russians there. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens and how this is all going to shake out, because I think there's probably... maybe an assumption on the American side that if they, you know, in quotes, give, not that it's theirs to give, but if they recognize those regions and keep the charm offensive going with Russia, that somehow Russia will mind its own business if there's attacks on Iran and China. That's, I don't know, I think that's possibly what's going on there, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, the position of the United States is weakening day by day, and the super friends of Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping, and then their various allies, which BRICS includes Iran, the humanity, world politics is moving in their direction. But anyway, I want to thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Patrick. It's a pleasure as always.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio.
only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.